City and stay there all night long, and ended up being like a whole overnight layover because of flight problems. You guys hear me okay? I'm using these headphone things. Can never tell. Whoever's gonna come hang out, go ahead. Hopefully everyone got a chance to buy the dip and all that. Crypto easy season is here. There's still kind of a lot of like disbelief that we're gonna like crash and this and that and the other thing. I don't think that's true. Like the ETF, like Bitcoin volumes are actually higher than the SPX, you know, the ETF, which is the ETF for the stock market. So that's kind of like getting pretty busy. And I think JP Morgan just mentioned that more people are holding Bitcoin ETF than they are gold ETF. That's pretty telling. I don't think they're all speculators either. There's probably a lot of people just holding. I know I bought some, and I'm holding an ETF because it was just convenient to get it there. So I think we have a lot of upside to go here, and I think a lot of the like crypto altcoin kids, like quite frankly, don't know what the fuck they're doing. Like mostly like if you go to a lot of spaces and stuff, I was just checking some out today. Basically a bunch of children don't know what the fuck they're doing at all. like worrying about this and worrying about that. But really I think we're in good shape. Like we're just seeing like the Google Trends trend upward on various coins and things. So it's pretty typical. Like this is exactly like 2020. Honestly, except that it's, you know, pre-halving and whatever. In terms of timing, it's a little bit different. But other than that, it's all the sentiment, everything's the same. Good stuff. Hey, Morty, how are you doing this evening? I'm trying to speak too loud because in an airport, we find a nice spot here.
Pretty good. Just hanging out at my dad's door, working.
Okay, good. Yeah, I was kind of heading home from working these nights, so I'm not going to be staying up all night every night like I was before.
What's your opinions on the dip?
I don't know. I just like bought a little bit of everything, pretty much. I guess obviously you could dip again or whatever. But if we have like a sideways thing for a few months, I think it'll be very good. Like you'll get a lot more upside if you get more like consolidation time and stuff. It depends. Like if you want to get rich quick, then what you have to have happen is everything just goes up straight up. If you want like a much higher top, then you need to have like more consolidation kind of over time. You pick up anything, or are you out of money?
I'm out. I gotta wait for every paycheck now to fucking buy the dips, but hopefully my next one, the dip will still be dipping. But yeah, I'm already fully loaded.
Yeah, I mean, I think like most people who've been here should be largely fully loaded anyway, in terms of, unless, you know, you have income coming in, you're trying to figure out what to do about it. What are you doing, Briar? Good talking to you.
I'm looking for airdrop tools on Polygon. All of them are congested, or the front ends are broken.
On Polygon?
Yeah.
and you're looking for airdrops for what? Like if you hold the Matic token or something or what?
No, I'm trying to find an airdrop deployer tool for my own token.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Oh, I did it.
Is it? Is Matic a pretty good chain? Like layer two?
It's great for me because I've been on the Kronos chain for like the past 3 years trying to build over there. And we thought it was gonna be a great onboarding platform because it was one of the only decentralized tokens or layer twos that are connected to a major centralized exchange like crypto.com, so you could on ramp and off ramp real easy directly from DeFi.
How'd that work out? Like, is that that thesis not sticking or what?
No, it worked out pretty bad. I mean, they're spending a lot of money on promotions, like they're sponsoring UFC, they bought the Staples Centers, they did F1, but people started whispering that they were just dumping on us under the
dumping the what, the crow token?
Yeah, so it went to $1, so it was $1,000 for like 1,000 tokens, and you know, gas went up with it because it was released on the Cosmos SDK. So we were like, oh well, we hope it goes cheaper, so the gas is cheaper, and we could like actually build on the thing. And then it went down to 50 cents, and it went down to like 10 cents, and then it went then it went to an unrecognizable number. And
you mean just the coin price?
Yeah, the coin price in general, but also the gas fees are going up and down with it. It wasn't like modifiable because the validators are still taking like higher gas fees. But anyway, long story short, I built on that for a long time, thinking that people were going to come over and build on it with like all the notoriety that crypto.com had, and they just never wound up coming over. So I launched a token on Matic and Solana, thinking that, you know, I'd be able to utilize the same tools for both of them, even though one was written with like Neon, the other one's Solidity, but I was completely wrong. It was way different.
Your impression is like there's still a lot of, is there a lot of activity and whatnot on Matic now?
Oh yeah, the
Polygon
chain's pretty congested, and even when the price goes down, it starts to come right back up because people start building on it again. So that's like the difference between crypto investors who are like looking for a pump, and then the developers is when the price comes down, you know, it's super cheap to build.
I've literally never once on Cosmos noticed anything about my transactions, like the price, the speed, nothing.
That's good.
Why is crypto.com's the crow chain, is it like like how high are the gas fees? What are we talking?
Oh, I mean, just pennies on the dollar. But when the Crow token went up to $1, it was like 30 cents per transaction, which was a lot more expensive.
Oh yeah, that's pretty high. It's pretty high for a Cosmos chain.
That's
so
yeah. They're doing it on EVM version or riding on ETH rails.
Is Kronos riding on ETH?
Yeah, it's a
yeah, dude. IBC. it's a Cosmos SDK that like costs a nickel to print a billion. Also, it's riding on ETH too because Cosmos has this nice little feature where it can just work with any other chain. So
no, I follow, but like, is Kronos an EVM compatible chain?
Yeah, I mean they all are.
No, well, not natively, they're not. CosmWasm is the standard smart contract platform of most Cosmos chains. You don't have to use it though. You could, like Polygon is was built to be EVM, obviously.
I just meant compatible as in like it's easily adaptable. Yeah,
but my question is like, what does it have to do with the gas fees? Like, Briar, is that something that they just set really high?
So yeah, I mean, now they're voting on it as if it's a community standard, but they at the time they may have just jacked it up as well.
Okay.
I mean, that would be an unseen part of.
Sean, there's kind of a racket back there. You're going to have to mute between talking.
I claimed an airdrop on like Arbitrum, and by the time I got the $120 airdrop, I spent like $80. Like, and that was on to get to a layer two.
Okay. That's not a good sign. Like, that sounds kind of bearish for the future viability of those things. How are they going to scale those L2s? Then?
That's why Solana is exploding, dude.
I suppose. I don't know how scalable Solana is either, I guess. They have that new system they're building. I'm not sure, like, when that takes place. I forget the name of it.
It definitely, like, it's going to run. It's just like we do this every time. We run literally into the physical barrier where the technology cannot handle any more network. You know, so we'll see where that is, but.
Okay. Yeah, that's the reason I've been kind of like buying heavily into Chainlink more, because like these things just don't work. Like blockchains are not meant for this.
I interestingly, like, we were really open about it the other day. I was talking with Solana and like an EVM dev in the big space, and like we were just going for a while, just like, dude, we're inflating the tokens just to make stuff to pay the fees, you know, so that people will do the validating, and like, you know, how are we going to do this like long term? We basically don't, none of us care what chain we're on, right? We just want to have like sovereignty and the ability to like move between places. And this guy came up and he's like, oh, yeah, I'm working on this like AI thing that just like basically, and he's like showing me and he pulled it up. I'll tell you the ticker and stuff later, but it's like, dude, if that works just like without any governance and you, it just maps the easiest, cheapest route for you and then you just can do it, like that would be fucking sick. Like that would solve the whole damn problem, you know? If it just like.
Wait, what?
Well, you're talking about a lot of different things here, but basically the simple answer is like blockchains really should be used for finality and for like immutability predominantly. And actually there's no obvious reason for them to be used at all for like general execution, data availability, or anything else. Like it's just kind of silliness. So I think like what will happen long term is like it makes sense to have infinite app chains that are cheap and easy to store like some final financial data on, and then you use something like a more infinitely scalable process, like something like Chainlink or something similar in the future. Like it just doesn't make sense to like have blockchains for these things, because like any individual blockchain is going to get overwhelmed eventually. And I think there's, I forget the name of the update that the Solana people are going to do, but you have to see like how much improvement that makes in terms of transaction speeds and stuff.
We're just talking like openly, you know, it's just like remedying, like putting a band-aid on the problem. So, you know, like it doesn't solve the issue. And like, I don't know, it just seems like maybe it'll all come together and we'll just go to like the moon for infinity this time. Because if it all worked, it'd be great.
You guys want airdrops of some of my tokens while I'm doing it?
Check the comment.
I had like some airport overhead message going on. I have to pause periodically. Fucking thing is loud. I think Solana is kind of like the popular thing again this season. Will it be the popular thing next season? Like, it's clear that people want to be on the, you know, a growth chain. You know, like last time, one of those growth chains was kind of like Luna UST. This time it's, last time and this time, it's a bit of Solana. And like, it's wherever people are having the most fun. That's where people seem to kind of gravitate to as far as new retail customers are concerned. So it's kind of same thing, just different season, basically.
Well, you were talking about an AI bot earlier. What were you looking for the AI bot to do?
It does. It just doesn't do it at an affordable price yet. Like the actual like thing itself is around like $10,000 to purchase. So like it's not like usable by an individual yet. But it like it just maps the, like if you put in like an Ethereum address and like a Solana address, right? Like instead of figuring out what bridges and ports and like whatever the fuck you have to use to like get there and like do that, it basically just maps the most efficient way to do it and then sends it that way after you approve it. And it's like, if we could get that to work.
Are you talking about basically a router?
Right. It's like, it would be like a universal router for us to be able to use and like that would be like immediately implemented. You know, like I don't know if
But by next season that's obsolete though, because like CCIP pretty much eliminates all that shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you won't need any of that. Chainlink pretty much like obsoletes all the rest of the shit.
So it's like, just don't want like, Chainlink to be like the only option because like we don't know it's perfect, you know? Like down the road, like, oh, we have Chainlink built into everything and like there's nothing else, and then it's 1999 and we're like, we gotta add ones.
It's like TCP/IP. Like you could build another internet if you want, but someone's gonna win at this game. So like TCP/IP won that game, right? That's all there is to it. Like at this point, like how many different cables do you want to back on the back of your television set? You want HDMI and you want like how many others, right? Like so at some level, multiple options are there, but usually the big winner is gonna take all the liquidity is gonna flow to whatever gets you the best user experience in the end. So yeah, we know that from tech, just pure like generally speaking.
I guess it kind of weirded me out a little bit. They're like when they're doing their PayPal thing the other day, and like I was listening to the space, and it was just like, I don't know, it was a bit strange to hear like PayPal and Paxos like talking to like the Chainlink devs as like,
What do you mean? Weirded you out?
It was just
what are you talking about?
It was just a space. The PayPal's and Paxos are like implementing CCIP like right now, so that they can use their PayPal USD or whatever and just like immediately use it. So like,
yeah, it means that you'll be able to swap. By the way, you have like your speakers on or loud or something. It's giving me a lot of feedback, but yeah, it basically means that like, you'll be able to onboard and offboard cash to crypto, like pretty much immediately using PayPal, or for that matter, like Paxos G has gold. Paxos gold, and you'll be able to like use that pretty nice. You'll have a gold backed
coin. You got to be more paranoid, right, man? Like you're also exposing all your personal information and like GPS coordinates for every transaction you make to the entire blockchain. Like,
that's not correct.
How is that not correct?
No, you're not doing that. Like, what are you talking about? You just made that up. Like, you just like,
no, I didn't. No, click on your privacy settings in PayPal and click on give me my information. Every single like GPS coordinate that you're at is like right there on every transaction. And like, what is Chainlink doing? It's making it accessible to other blockchains. Like,
no, that's not what PayPal's doing. I mean, that's not what Chainlink's doing with your PayPal data.
Okay.
PayPal keeps that data. That's a different thing. Like, right, you don't have to use PayPal, though. What does that mean? Anything?
Right, you don't have to use any.
Chainlink will implement any data that the company that connects to it wants to implement. There is no purpose for like revealing your location data.
They just said they would do whatever the company wants to implement. Like once the technology's in there, they can implement.
Yeah, but you're making up things that don't actually like need to happen. Like
I'm not making anything up, dude. I'm saying it's straight up possible.
No. What is the purpose of putting your location data onto a blockchain transaction for some reason?
Dude, all they do is mine our information. Like that's literally the purpose of like my life is to be information.
Ooh, PayPal?
Everyone, like they all, like every social media thing, like that's like what it was, just to advertise.
Yeah, but like you're using open blockchains now. Like everything you have can be can be completely tracked at this moment. There's nothing special about that. Like you're acting as if you're like
all I was
in
saying
land of
that,
secrets.
Like, weirded me out. Like,
every transaction you have can be tracked. Yeah, every transaction you have is absolutely open now. So it's like,
so actually, there's a new experimental button on MetaMask that will stop third parties from
decentralized
tracking
identification. Right. So you're logged into whatever you're logged into without ever exposing your identity or anything like to begin.
Yeah, but not for the blockchain though, right?
No, it's like a prerequisite of interacting with another blockchain would be like,
first of all, when it comes to PayPal, you're going to know exactly what they share on chain or not because you can see that. So if you don't like to use PayPal for some reason, you don't use PayPal. That's it. Like,
dude,
what makes this complicated?
It's not complicated. I'm just saying, no, that it, like, it's weird, dude. It's weird to have.
No,
like,
there's in the United States of America today, there's no onboarding solution where your money is not going to be tracked right onto the blockchain. Like, there's no solution like that. Like, there isn't one. Like, you can be found out one way or the other. So it's like, there's no, yeah, this doesn't exist. It's a fantasy. Like, I'm not sure why you're worried about it. Anyway, you're
because PayPal has their own, like, I cannot get access to PayPal's individual data, is what I'm saying. As soon as it goes onto the blockchain, I have immediate accessibility to everyone's information. Like, yeah, like, that's the difference.
Having been here for the rise of the internet, I can tell you right now, like, whichever system, whether it's Chainlink or anybody else, basically bridges like the Swift USD system, US dollar system, is able to bridge treasuries and bonds and whatever, is able to bridge stocks. That system just simply wins and everybody else loses. That's what's going to happen. Now, is it going to be Chainlink? They seem to be the one doing the most work in this regard. That's what they've been working for years. Now, are they going to actually be the one to, like, accomplish that, or somebody else? That remains to be seen. But I do know this, like, in tech, it's winner takes all. Everyone else dies. That's how this works, like, generally speaking. Like, that's my, like, just the history of the space and history of technology. Because the thing is, users and for that matter, companies don't want to use a million different systems. Like, if you were to build a new internet today, like, you know, for some reason, you're like, oh, I have a better internet. Okay, build it. And maybe the tech would even be better. But at the same time, it doesn't mean the whole world's going to adopt that thing. So it does take quite a bit of effort to make changes. And so, you know, companies and such don't want to, like, companies have to spend a lot of money to create new software to implement all those things.
That's so, Sethi, let's assume Chainlink takes a big portion of that space, right? So because of whatever multiple reasons that you always are mentioning, and there's still some people in some, let's say, jurisdictions where they basically have no, it doesn't really work for them to work with Chainlink for whatever particular reason. So what other blockchains would have, say, a justification for being alive in that scenario? Because there surely is, well, this kind of scenario where, yeah, not the entire world is able to interact with Chainlink on that.
So the simple thing is, like, any company, any country is going to be able to make its own databases, networks. They're going to be able to make their own. You keep their whatever banking systems.
CBDCs.
They're going to be able to make CBDCs. They're going to be able to make their own blockchains. The issue here is not, like, whether or not different companies and individuals can have sovereignty. Hell, you can spin up your own Cosmos chain now, right? It doesn't, like, there's nothing special about it. So blockchains are not special anymore. They're just, you know, app chains will show up, like, left and right. Anybody can make one. Like, it's that simple. A country, a company, whatever. So the question becomes, how do you connect all of those? Do you want stranded liquidity on each of these things? Do you want every theoretical real world company that wants to use a system to have to, like, somehow coordinate transactions across all these different chains? No, this is not a universe we're going to live in. Like, no one's doing that. Like, no companies are going to spend that kind of money to do all that shit. They just want some simple thing to plug their, you know, they want an outlet on the wall. They can plug a wire into it, and next thing you know, they're accessing the world's financial system. So that's what the Chainlink people are trying to achieve. And it's like these decentralized Oracle networks are basically like groups of computers, as it were, not unlike, you know, a blockchain validator set, something similar to that. But, you know, let's say a group of 100 computers or 1,000 computers run, say, for example, an airline thing. And then, like, that just has to connect to, like, it can use that, the same infrastructure, but you can own your own computers. That's the key here. Like, you don't, CCIP is simply, like, saying, like, okay, it's like a programming language. It's like a messaging language. It's not, it doesn't reduce your sovereignty because you implement it. That makes sense. You see what I'm saying? Like, and at the end of the day, like, even if you had a fancier system, because eventually a fancier thing than TCIP, like, right now, there's better tech for making the internet. Like, you could redo the internet from scratch. But why does that not happen? It's because it's really, really hard to rebuild the entire base structure, base layer, so to speak, from scratch. This is why, like, you know, Swift, like, is basically obsolete. It has, like, T+2 transaction speeds. DTCC is the same way. So those systems have kind of become like obsolete. And what these people have been trying to do is build something, you know, new to basically replace all of that. And looking at like the needs of the world's biggest transactors in this space. Like, for example, Vodafone is connected to Chainlink for their automation services. And what they're using that for is like anti-phishing software. So just think of like what Chainlink's doing now is just this gigantic operating system for like a massive number of new computers to create new networks. And you can basically, it's like an interesting thing about it is you can add as many different types of computers into the mix as you feel like it. You can add AI computers, you can add databases. Like it just doesn't matter. Like and you can connect anything to it in theory, right? That's, it's like similar to TCP/IP in that sense. I think that's what Cosmos IBC was trying to do, except that it's like, it only works for like point to point transfers. There's no base layer system that keeps track of where all your assets are. So for example, if you have an IBC channel between a Cosmos hub and say, for example, Kujira, which there is, then you would basically have those two chains would keep track of all the assets transmitted back and forth in that channel. And that's it. You can't send that asset then to PayPal or to a bank or whatever. That's the difference. It's only point-to-point transmission. So that creates like more, it creates fragmentation of liquidity and whatnot. And just like, it messes with the user experience, quite frankly. So anyway, it's interesting stuff, but I was just curious like where Matic and some of these other like systems are in terms of speed and scalability. Are people happy with them and stuff?
Sorry, you guys said that PayPal will implement CCIP, that they say that. I saw they implemented price feeds, but did they say they will implement CCIP?
PayPal, I'm pretty sure, is price feeds. Yeah, I'm not so sure about CCIP.
I thought you guys say that in the...
No, I'm saying they could if they'd like to. Yeah, but I believe that it's price feeds. I believe you're right.
Yes.
I don't know if PayPal is doing anything more than that right now.
And Paxos?
Paxos incorporated CCIP so they can incorporate their digital gold, right? Because Paxos G is like their gold-backed coin, and they implemented CCIP so you could basically get Paxos G into the any ecosystem that has the CCIP connection.
Is that,
so like for example, Polygon. So because Paxos G incorporated into CCIP, you'll be able to use the gold-backed gold-backed coin, which basically tracks the price of gold. You'll be able to use it within Polygon. You'll be able to use it on Arbitrum, Optimism. Pretty much any chain that incorporates or layer two that incorporates CCIP will be able to use that asset, if that makes sense.
When was that announced?
Quite a while back. If you go to chainlinkecosystem.com, you'll be able to find the actual, like all the
different companies.
That's
huge because if Paxos is the issuer of the PayPal USD, then for PayPal to adopt CCIP, if Paxos already did it, it's like they could announce it tomorrow.
I don't think it's Paxos USD. I think it's Paxos Gold and the other assets they have too. It's like they also have Circle USD already on CCIP now as well. So
yes.
So basically now any new blockchain that emerges no longer has to incorporate a stablecoin anymore. All they have to incorporate now is CCIP and they get access to all these things immediately. Like it's truly a game changer, I'm telling you. Like there's no comparator to this so far. It's pretty bleeding edge as far as like the thing is the tech is neat, but the problem was that not so much that the tech development, they figured that out. The problem is how do you get all these different companies to decide to join your particular thing? So the business development side of it's quite difficult. How do you convince the companies that, you know, Swift and whoever else to, you know, build on your system, right? And that's what's going on. So that's the impressive part to me. That's the bullish part, that they're actually getting adoption. And really the end user won't even know they're using CCIP. They won't like, they won't even notice it. You'll just notice that, like, in 4 or 5 years, your end user experience will be, you can use, move any asset anywhere and you won't even know why it's working. You won't need routers. What's his name was saying earlier, Sean, you don't need any of that stuff anymore. Once you have this, you can go like in your wallet from one chain to the other and you won't even notice. That's how cool it'll be. But anyway, that's the idea. I think mainnet's supposed to open soon. So I'd like, more than likely, that'll be some bullish catalyst for price action too. I don't know when that's going to be. People keep talking about it.
So let's say most of our Chuck E. Cheese token chains disappear, right? That's basically your theory. Question is...
It's not they disappear. Like, they become... unimportant. Ultimately, you can have any number of them you can have. Like, app chains will really be useful because now you can literally have only... You only have to have one chain per feature. And unlike IBC, it'll be way more like broadly implemented. So the point is, like,
yeah, no, there was a different thought there. The thought was basically that we consider this, let's say we consider this like our tokens are like the little apps, like the little games, and then you have like a platform like Steam or something, right, where all these apps are sold on, kind of to try to kind of abstract that, right? So let's say we have the Solana ecosystem that's like the Steam platform. And then we have CCIP, that's something completely different because that's actually used for something real, like financial industry can use it, right? So it comes from a completely different angle in that regard. And they probably don't want to touch any of our Chuck E. Cheese tokens because they could imply some troubles with the SEC and whatnot, right? Because, all this stupid stuff.
Yeah, the banks and the stock market and all that, they will not have to have any relationship to anything else that touches CCIP. They're just issuing this into this ecosystem. And what you do with those tokens, whatever, is up to you at that point. It's more complicated with stocks and banking because you do have to have like a KYC component. So they're going to have that piece of it where it's like a ZK privacy type deal where, you know, your information can only be seen by the parties that like need it. Like, for example, your bank already knows your information. That information it'll be tokenized and whatnot. And then what will happen is that will allow you to do certain transactions with your stocks and banking coins that you otherwise otherwise might not have been able to do. And your money will go straight to the system.
The big money will be on Chainlink, right? So what's the fun part? Where's the fun part going to be? Which blockchains are going to survive and provide the fun part, right? I mean, some of these blockchains, they just suck, like ETH, if it's busy, if it's too expensive, and it just doesn't work for anyone. And all these, what else, layer twos of ETH, they're kind of in a competition, but I don't see how they will ever survive Solana, you know? It's just like a much better user experience in itself.
Yeah, I mean, already, like Matt, he was saying, like Briar was saying, like to some extent, Polygon is busy, congested. I think Arbitrum people have said some of the same things. I don't know. I haven't really used all those that much. Briar, do you have like some user experience thoughts on like Polygon and some of these things as far as like how fast are they and whatever? How costly are they in terms of fees?
It's unbelievably fast, but one of the largest issues that they're having is as they upgrade, older code becomes slower and obsolete. And it's difficult for people to keep up during a bear market to continuously upgrade. So they have like the new ZEK chain coming out where it's supposed to be a faster upgrade. But, you know, you're asking people to build on chain for you to grow adoption. You can't advance that fast where you're constantly updating like, you know, Windows 98.
Yeah, it's just hard to keep the software on it up, like running if you have things break all the time in the background, changes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some degree of like
Kronos is.
Yeah, it's almost like some degree
Kronos is getting rid of its Kronos scan because they claim that it costs $1 million a year for them to represent that blockchain under the tools that they utilize. So they're going to something called Kronos Explorer, which is garbage. Or maybe they're coming out with something better. I'm sorry. I shouldn't just assume. I'm not fudding.
No, no, it's fine. Stuff. Like, we're just talking shit. Like, we don't. People can buy whatever they want to buy as far as coins and such. Yeah, like, no, every chain has its flaws. There isn't a perfect one today as far as, like, layer one type things. That's what's interesting to me. Like, to me, like, in one way, the Chainlink buy was the more brainless buy because I don't have to follow what fucking chain works and what doesn't. Because as new chains come out, they'll basically be able to connect to CCIP if they want to. And as more and more chains attach to it, the more likely a new chain is going to want to, because how else are they going to get liquidity quickly? How else are they going to have the same user experience for the people on their platform? So my suspicion is that, like, the future looks like lots of app chains. I think Cosmos got the app chain part right, where, like, you know, you can make infinite app chains for whatever, like, throughput you need. So if you feel like your casino needs its own chain, well, fine, great. You know, you have a gigantic amount of throughput for just, like, a casino, right? Like, so once you split up into app chains, you have tons of infinite throughput you can create by just adding more chains. And then by you solve the problem of, like, chain congestion, because with CCIP, your assets can move to either chain. So, like, let's say, like, chain number 7 of your casino is already congested as well. 7 billion people are playing on all your casino chains. So now the thing is, you can move assets between any one of them because the CCIP can connect them all to all of them. And the assets can Jay-Z chain. They can jump from one chain to the other, whereas IBC does not do that. So this is why, like, when I look at this, I'm like, this is how it should have, IBC should have been built, not the way it's built now with the hub and spoke
model. Has someone actually ever discussed the problem of the operational costs of a blockchain on the long run? I mean, a bank charges the customer's fee to maintain their data and store them in a vault for, like, whatever fiscally required, like 12 years. But then they throw it away, right? I mean, you can't look up your bank balance. It's like 20 years ago. But with a blockchain, it's a bit different, right? In 20 years, you will still be able to have some explorer that has some huge database to look up for and find your bloody transaction.
That's from true.
20 years ago. It's gonna be a problem at some point.
So everything's open source, though, also. So there's constantly the capability for other people to enter the market.
Yeah, it's just like the some kind giant of heap of shit that piles up there, right? I mean, it's just going to be so massive, and it's going to cost everyone that
uses
it.
That's why Noob Celestia looks at, like, this data availability problem differently, that not all data needs to be, saved forever. So it depends on what the purpose of the data is.
There needs to be some pruning, right? But let's say you're legally required to keep your tax records for a certain amount of time, right? So, and that's where the bank actually starts to prune their data, right? It's basically, okay, we're over that threshold and we can throw it out, right? It costs them money too to keep their data and the old stuff. They will throw the old stuff out. They may keep the markers like a central ledger balance. So for whatever studies you will do in the future, but not every single account, every transaction, right? I mean, it's just going to be such a huge pile of useless information. And tell me one blockchain that really addresses this issue in a reasonable manner at the moment. You know,
but that's exactly why I think, like, Chainlink's useful, because it doesn't require, this is not what it does. And that's the beauty of it. You can add as many blockchains and people can either, you can even add normal computers. You don't need to add, like, you can have a CCIP asset issuer be, like, for example, an airline that issues, let's say, frequent flyer miles into the system. They don't even need to have, like, a blockchain. They could just issue it with their regular servers. So, you know, because traditional database is much
more completely flexible in that regard. They can spool up and do whatever they want, right? I mean, they just provide the security and the backbone to the whole thing, right? Whatever you do with the data they transmit securely is your thing. If you put it to the bin straight away after Chainlink transmits it, that's also fine for them, I guess.
Yep.
But yeah, the nodes that receive the payment are on a blockchain, right?
It depends. Like, not necessarily.
Yes, this is the problem
because they have to pay in Link.
Yeah, they have to pay in Link, but it's not the problem of Of Chainlink, because they don't have to make this available to everyone. In the blockchain, you have to have like 500, 1,000, 50,000 nodes all storing the same blockchain data, right? With Link, they just have to have the expression on that particular blockchain where they transacted with, right? what they do internally, no one sees in a way, right? So it's none of the other people's concerns. It's completely out of the, let's say.
So CCIP can connect two systems that are not even a blockchain, and the way they pay, it's with the interoperability CCIP gives with a blockchain, but could be only for the payment, and then they could connect those other systems that are not a blockchain.
What you have to do if you want like seamless interoperability is you would have to provide liquidity of your token, whatever that is, and you know whether it's frequent flyer miles or something else, they have some value, right? You basically have to provide a certain number of that. You have to provide a certain amount of that token, and they will pair it with a certain amount of LINK. So there's almost like a liquidity layer in CCIP, so that you basically have the ability to like transmit, you can basically transmit information without having to worry about the gas token itself. You can basically have your token, let's say Solana coins, and you want to send it to Polygon, for example. You'd be able to basically use your Solana as gas. It'll convert to LINK in the background and then buy you Matic tokens or whatever you want on the other end. So like these kinds of capabilities are possible. And that's why they call it like the universal gas token. This is the thinking. So yeah, like just think of like a gigantic mega computer for which like the oil in between it to make it work is basically LINK tokens back and forth. And then that it abstracts away the end users need to decide like what type of token they have to have and all that other bullshit. So that it eliminates all the fragmentation in the market today, where, you know, today you're like, okay, what chain am I on? Like, you know, what type of asset do I need to play on Solana? Okay, I need the Sol token. But wait a minute, I'm over here on Matic. How do I get over there? Okay, well, I need to go to like take my Matic tokens, maybe to a centralized exchange, sell them, buy myself some Solana, send it over there. Like, it's just a silly end user experience for the age of the internet, right? Like, if you think about like how we move things around, electronically, the user experience seems silly the way we do it now. And it's clearly not going to stay that way. Even if Chainlink's not the final successor of all this, there's no fucking way grandma and like little kids and stuff are going to use the system. There's no way in the world. So you know all of this shit's going obsolete. Like if you're a developer or whatever building any blockchain and you have like pie in the sky theory that this thing is going to go to like whatever, this is just like rudimentary tech at the very best. Like with mediocre user experiences at the very best, right? Like, so that's what needs to change. And that's what is interesting to me about what Chainlink's doing. Again, like, I don't know if it's going to be the end all be all. I think it's an interesting enough like bet in terms of investing in it for me that A, I don't think it's going to go to zero right now. And B, I think there's a lot of upside in terms of like technology fundamentals and all that. And of course we're in a bull market. So like everything goes up, but outside of that, like, you know, we don't know for sure who's going to win this game. Like, I think Binance Layer Zero did some work. I think it's Binance Labs funded or something. Cosmos IBC did some work, of course. And then I think the XRP people, Ripple, have been doing something with banking. Like, I don't know how far they've gotten with this shit in terms of like reducing the cost of bank to bank remittances. But to me, it's like, why, like, that seems obsolete already. Like, why would you want bank-to-bank remittances only when you'd really need to have, like, the stock market tied to it? You need to tokenize everything. So most of the bankers out there and most of the, like, you know, your Larry Finks and all these type of people, they're basically talking about, they use the word tokenization, like, a lot the last 2 years on the news. I don't know if you guys watch very much, like, this stuff, but the word tokenization is used a lot. What they haven't described is how they're going to tokenize any of their stuff. What we do know is that, like, incidentally, Chainlink's talking with a lot of those groups. So it's like, you know, is that the standard that they're going to implement? Who knows? Here's the thing, like, someone implemented Swift at some point, right? I don't know the exact history of that shit, but it emerged out of somewhere. Some sort of computer nerd had to come up with that shit. And then everyone, all the banks in the world decided, hey, we're going to use that messaging system. Which is pretty weak, actually. It's like if you've ever gone to a bank to do a wire transfer, it's a lot of paperwork and a lot of bullshit. It's basically very 20th century. All that stuff needs to change for sure. It's who's gonna win that war who's gonna win the kitty of gold for like taking over that is what remains to be seen. And the promise of blockchain, the promise of decentralized networks, is where sort of like connecting all that TradFi shit comes in. Now, this doesn't mean that like this is going to be some anonymous cypherpunk thing. That's what Zephyr's for. Like, you know, so like, so Chainlink is more, is not a bet on like some sort of like cypherpunk world. It's a bet on TradFi moving to a new base layer system, and that blockchains like ideally would want to communicate with each other. And it's, so far, like Polygon, Arbitrum, Optimism, all of them have decided to implement CCIP along with some dApps, like for example, GMX. I know some Melier Finance, which is a Zucky Mannion's chain in Cosmos. They incorporated CCIP. They want to be able to like trade Bitcoin and ETH assets and different things that are issued on that. So they're using it. I haven't talked to him lately to be able to like get an impression about like what that implementation looks like and what they're using it for and shit. That'd be fun to talk about it. I need to message him and see if he'll do a space or something and grill him a little bit with his devs. But like, yeah, like there are definitely chains doing this. And I think like the other interesting thing there is the NFT standard. So another like piece of this is that it's not just CCIP and price speeds, but they have an NFT standard also. If you incorporate NFT, you put it on CCIP, it can go to any chain that has CCIP connected. So now you'll be able to move Matic tokens over to Matic NFTs, over to Arbitrum, Arbitrum NFTs, over to whatever, right? That's going to be really cool. Yeah, Brian, go ahead.
Is that why V3s are built with an NFT NFT base?
I'm not sure.
Because as people are migrating, like SushiSwap is migrating to V3 this week, so all their staking pools are becoming obsolete. They have an announcement up on the main page.
Oh yeah, and I think SushiSwap was one of the ones on the Chainlink page that is doing some sort of either CCIP or something. So maybe that's part of that. I'm not 100% sure though.
Go ahead. I've been speaking with devs all week about it because the liquidity pools that I've made are not being picked up on scanners or auditing AI bots. I don't know if you guys have ever checked out D.fi, but they utilize a lot of artificial intelligence for quick audits, code writing, security protocols. So back to, I think it was, I'm not sure who was speaking before, they were talking about AI bots. I know they're integrating it pretty fast, but the APIs are getting pretty expensive to build on those. Even, I'm super multitasking. Yeah, so I'm always going on a thousand. I don't want to get off topic.
I mean, I think, well, AI bots and all that is a very different thing. You can use bots and stuff with all of these things. It's simply a matter of, that's a different functional thing. This is just like the biggest thing here is the ability to move. I think the most bullish thing is like the ability to move assets from chain to chain, NFTs from chain to chain, have a standard for all of those things so that like, and there's no, of course, you don't want to have any double spends. So you want to make sure that like there's only one version of that coin. Like if $100 is issued onto 100 chains, there should be a dollar on each chain, let's say. You want to make sure that it doesn't suddenly become $200, like, you know, because some sort of like glitch or whatever. So you have to make sure all of the coins are accounted for in all the different chains. And that's the basic promise of CCIP, is that in the background, it's a layer zero taking care of all of that information. And it's the issuer that has to pay for the network to keep that information going steady. So there is a fee that has to be paid, and the issuer is providing a lot of liquidity and stuff, which is interesting. So I think an end result of this will be, there will be some DEXs that will be like CCIP DEXs, and they'll probably become, quite frankly, gigantic. A huge amount of liquidity could move there, because a big thing that like blockchains suffer from right now is every chain has to have its own liquidity pools, right? Like you got to be able to swap from this thing to that thing. When you incorporate CCIP, in theory, you could have this gigantic like gigadexes that basically allow you to convert anything to anything. And you, as a new app developer, a game developer, whatever the fuck, you don't need to have a DEX or liquidity pool. Like, you know, And if there is a liquidity pool, like let's say you're a developer, and like you have a token for your project or something, you only have to provide that liquidity one time in one place, and everyone within CCIP might be able to utilize it by proxy, which is pretty awesome. Because right now you have basically just fragmented.
That's fantastic.
Just imagine right now, like you have a multi-chain coin, like you have, I don't know, like your Bonk tokens are on Solana and they're also on Ethereum or something. Now you have like one bridges, which is a problem, but you also have the problem of like having to have another liquidity pool on that chain, and you have to have another LP on each chain for that. So you have to tie up more USDC or Tether or whatever. That's way more capital efficient to be able to focus the LPs in one place. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I was just speaking with people earlier, wondering how, as institutions buy up significant amounts of the Bitcoin for ETFs, we were talking about the dangers and the pros to it. And one of the pros that we were thinking were once the supply dries up to enough of an extent that they'll actually have to mine out these altcoins to get to the liquidity to pull the Bitcoin out. But it's a double-edged sword, right? Because some of these layer twos may not, you know, for security reasons, don't show you how much Bitcoin they physically hold.
Right.
They're just reflecting right. some type of wrap protocol that they claim that they have. So, you know, it might behoove them not to become too successful because they're technically isn't the liquidity that's being reflected. In
yeah,
the
how much of the wrapped of Bitcoin is real is a different thing. And that's where the Chainlink exactly. proof of reserve system comes in. So they're building that. They built that too. Remember, that's what ARK Invest, you know, the Cathie Wood's company, they incorporated that into their Bitcoin ETF so that you can go onto the thing and check, do they actually have the Bitcoin that they claim that they have ETF shares for? So similarly, what's going to happen is, I think what will happen is you're going to get new issuers of wrapped Bitcoin, but it won't be wrapped in a sense. It's going to be issued into CCIP, but you're going to have a trusted entity that actually custodians that Bitcoin. So right now, for example, if you go to Fidelity or BlackRock, you can buy the Bitcoin ETF, right? But the difference will be that ETF share will simply be able to be dumped into CCIP and issued. And then what's going to happen is you will now have a trusted custodian holding that. So you no longer have this problem of, wait, well, who wrapped this BTC? Is it real? Is it not? Like, wait a minute, who has the reserves? Who the fuck has those? Not only that, but who has the keys for them, right? Like, so if you're El Salvador and you have, like, they just, Nayib Bukele or whatever just tweeted today, he's like, we're going to basically take our Bitcoin. We're going to take this much of it. I think it's like $500 million worth. Excuse me one second.
Sefi, I've got one question for you. So there's this Brian Romlet, right? And he posted a while ago, I think it's like 2 weeks, about this 1,000-word safe wisdom org that I think he initiated. So there's 1,000 questions which you basically reply to and you record them, and it could be built in the future AI. So you leave an imprint for future generations, like your kids and your descendants, of what you've been or what your life was about, right? Would you be interested in doing that? I think it's a lot of work to answer these 1,000 questions.
I think everyone thinks about that sort of thing at some point. If they have kids, they're like, hey, I wonder if my, you know, kids would like to know me better or something. I should make a video or whatever. Or maybe
have you looked at those questions? I mean,
I have not. That, no,
it's on that website, safewisdom.org. So they're all on there, like these 1,000 questions.
Save wisdom.
.org, yes. Just
interesting. Yeah, something to check out.
Yeah. I just wonder how much hours of recording you need to answer that. You know, but it's like it's a bunch. Like it's like really deep questions. Like whatever. Like what resentment, losses, or hurts have you found acceptance around, you know, or whatever, you know, there's some really different things there, like on completely unrelated, like 200 questions down. It's like something, how do you exemplify the change you want to see in the world? like these kind of questions, right?
This, yeah, like it's like evoking, I mean, like details about your life. And stuff.
The problem is probably if you answer all these questions, you probably need a hard drive, you know, because you could actually talk about an hour on each one of those questions, which is like probably the worst.
Yeah. To do. Yeah, like as if your kids really want to go through that fucking list and see what you said. Like.
No, but if you build it in a, the concept is like to listen to something like that would be super boring. But if you can build an AI which actually reflects the personality of that person, the concept.
Oh, really I see. Good, I right? see. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah,
so they feed that all into an LLM, and then you actually have like the digital Cephi, you know, it's like the super nerd that talks about cheese tokens.
They're going to be pretty good, like. See, right now we're talking about it from the angle that we have to train them, but I think what they'll do is just listen to us for a long time and they'll be like digital copies of us that'll be pretty close. I don't think you're going to need to like train them explicitly, although you can probably get much more detailed if you, yeah, you go to specific questions like that. It makes sense. Anyway, yeah, but back to that thing, like the proof of reserves things, Briar, is pretty interesting as well, because like, you know, like a country like El Salvador can basically, you know, verifiably prove how much BTC they have, you know, how much is in their wallet at that given moment. And they could theoretically issue into CCIP some Bitcoin if they want to for whatever purpose they have, right? And while still actually right. retaining well, the native asset.
What one of the questions that we've been having inside my small little toxic echo chamber, which is so unhealthy, is we were discussing how the United States of America was one of the largest holders of Bitcoin from all of their seizures. And I've been keeping pretty close tabs on it, and they were supposed to have something in the vicinity of between 800,000 Bitcoin and 1.5 million, but now they're only reporting that they have 200,000. So, it might be difficult to prove that. That's just in my mind, for whatever weird fetish I have. I like to watch legislative oversight committees constantly. It's quite disgusting and boring.
You're like, but, like a, what's it called? The C-SPAN fan or something.
Yeah. I fall asleep to C-SPAN. My friends make fun of me about it all the time, but now we have YouTube. It's so much better. Technology is a beautiful thing. And now our politicians know that we're watching them all the time. You know, when they think the cameras are off, they're on and we could watch.
Yeah, I think like there's going to be a lot of like government applications for what Chainlink's doing, especially for like providing broad transparency and such.
So yeah, that's one of the questions that I had, is how they're going to be able to reflect the price increase if it's algorithmic and built into chain through DeFi. Because centralized exchanges haven't been reporting properly, even though people think, oh, you know, Shiba got listed on Coinbase. Well, they purchased that over the counter, institution to institution, not going through chain, not making massive pumps unless, you know, the vendor that they're purchasing it from forces them to purchase it that way. But more than likely, they'd rather do over the counter purchases. Similar to the way that they were going to auction off the United States government's reserve of Bitcoin to private institutions. And
yeah,
some of us thought basically, that that's how BlackRock was going to get theirs.
Yeah, at the end of the day, like, this is where that Chainlink's proof of reserves part comes in. So you have, like, one piece is proof of reserves. One is CCIP, which is cross-chain interoperability. Then you have, like, the Oracle system, obviously, the price feeds and all that. I mean, you put all of this shit together, automation and everything, you basically just have this gigantic sort of financial computer. And basically the people at Chainlink have considered every possible financial application you can imagine that's out there today, and are trying to build a section that can, you know, like a stack of, you know, eventually a programming stack that can handle all these various tasks. And like the latest one that they're trying to get fixed, built up, is the privacy one. So for example, if you are, you issue like your personal KYC information to a credit card company, for example, you don't want that information, all that data, to be known by everybody on the blockchain or somewhere, right? But you want it to be available to Visa or MasterCard, and they can basically issue you credit, right? information like that needs to stay partially private, and it needs to be private for the people that, like, it needs to be open to the people you want to give that information to and private for the people you don't. And so that kind of like thing is what the Chainlink DECO or whatever, DECO, is meant to solve, and they're working on that. So pretty much any financial transaction you do today, any interaction you do on the internet you do today, you basically want to have all of that better and faster than it was before and more decentralized. That's basically the goal.
Well, for instance, like when they set up the ETFs, the purchase was financially over the counter between Coinbase to maintain the as a executor and security proliferator of their asset, which is Bitcoin. And then they just started setting up, you know, a third party reflection app. But it seemed to me that they didn't necessarily have any kind of algorithmic cost reflection for the first few weeks that they went through.
Yeah, you're saying it wasn't mechanized like in the way that you would like it to be. Yeah, it's not for most of those other ETF issuers, like Fidelity and for what's the other one? Anyway, there's a bunch of them now. But the one that did implement the Chainlink proof of reserves is the ARK investing one. I think like 21 shares or something like that, they call it. So yeah, it's an option.
Right, Cathie Woods.
Yeah, the Cathie Woods one. Like it's an option for all these different groups to implement. And I think they, like, eventually if a standard emerges where everyone's doing it, everyone else will do it. You know how this stuff works. It's like lemmings. You've got to have, once it becomes the expectation that it's a thing. And the other thing too is, like, if it becomes a very standard thing, eventually regulations will say, oh, you have to incorporate this particular standard in so that we can see what's going on. Mm. So
they did a quick smash grab with that. 2 days ago, they had an emergency session of the Financial Oversight Committee on Digital Assets, attempting to make decentralized wallets, financial institutions, and implement banking licensure.
Yeah, because like if you look at the way the U.S. Like financial experience is today, a lot of the stuff you do, like you for businesses and stuff, you want all that stuff like to be seamless. To where like your accounting takes place simultaneously to when you spend the money and all of this. And right now it's a big disjointed system that requires lots of layers for taxes, for this, that. It's just a big mess. And if you look at like what happened with financial services, not financial services, but like government agencies, like for example, the Pentagon or basically DOD, Department of Defense, what happened is like you couldn't get... like the Department of Defense doesn't know where the fuck they spent all the money, right? You've seen how this is. Like they're like, oh, we'd like to be able to tell you where the money went, but like we don't have enough effort, we don't have enough people to do the auditing or some shit. Like where did you spend the money? Where'd these billions and trillions of dollars go? And they can't even tell you. So that's what Chainlink's designed to solve ultimately, with sufficient computing network strength. They can handle all that shit theoretically. That's the idea, at least. Yeah, Dylan, you're gonna say something.
I was going to ask you, are you familiar with like what exactly CCIP is going to do as far as how you're integrating it? Because from what I can see, I just jumped onto the space because I just randomly pick up research every once in a while about this thing, and I can't seem to get a straight enough answer on like whether or not this thing is just a router or it's actually it's a contract. Do you know which one it is?
So because my understanding is like, so when you, CCIP basically has a series of, there's a decentralized Oracle network. It's like basically a series of computers that are where you can connect to with CCIP. And that's where you issue your assets and different things into that system. So it's not a blockchain for starters. As far as like, I've never developed for this thing. I have no fucking clue like what I'm talking about. So I'm just going to say that. I think the Chainlink build program, BUILD, is kind of like how new builders are being onboarded to sort of basically add like a blockchain or a dApp or a DEX to these systems. I don't know exactly like at what level you'd want to do this. Like, you want to do this at a dApp level, a DEX level, or a chain level. I'm not exactly sure. Like, I would imagine the advantages are best at the chain level, but I'm not 100% sure about that. Because, like, for example, Matic and Polygon and like Arbitrum, for example, incorporated this thing. Does that mean that all the DEXs on that platform also get those assets that are CCIP capable, like Circle USD, things like that? Or like, do you have to have each DEX on that system also implement something, or what? And also, like, GMX implemented it, like, which I don't remember, but is GMX on Ethereum based chain? I don't remember. I don't know the Ethereum ecosystem that well. Anyway, but the thing is, like, yeah, exactly what the implementation looks like, I'm not sure. I heard it's really pretty easy, though. Like, they did a lot of work making the onboarding process much simpler. Like, they have full websites and tutorials and all that shit. I don't know if you've watched any of these, but they did a whole set of tutorials of what you're supposed to do, you know, video tutorials. So, I don't know, the onboarding is much, much better than, like, Cosmos IBC, for example, which is a fucking mess, quite frankly.
Well, yeah, we've related on that before, but I think what's funny about the whole IBC thing is that it's basically just four or five dudes in a room talking about how to bridge together, and it's not necessarily open source in that case. But for CCIP, I'm getting the same strange feeling, because I've been going back and forth with the same guy in an email about getting into CCIP, and he keeps coming back to me and saying, like, oh, well, this is how you get involved. I'm like, then why am I having this email thread with you to try to use
it? I think they have a full website that gets you through the coding and whatever necessary to do it. Like, they did a lot apparently for onboarding. I don't know the details, but, like, Chainlink Build is the project. They've even had, like, entire, like, I think courses or something. You know, they did a whole thing for it. I'm not 100% sure what you're looking for, but there's apparently a lot of good information. There's a fair amount of, like, if you look up Chainlink Build on, I think, YouTube, there's quite a few videos too that go through it, like, step by step, what it's capable of doing and all that stuff. I don't know enough about programming to tell you, like, you know, like what level of detail they're talking about or whatever. So, but
no worries.
I've heard good things from people that have, like the GMX people really loved it, for example. That they did a space on it. They're like, oh yeah, like, we can't see ourselves using anything but this. Like, this is the future, blah blah blah. You know. They're kind of like pumping it in a sense, but I mean, they liked it enough to implement it. And they're one of the more, I guess, like, profitable blockchains in the industry right now, as far as perps trading and stuff. But,
so could it be, do you think, do you know if it could just be like a general message passer? Because then I worry about, like, the use of Wormhole now because of, well, we know what happened to Wormhole, but then Wormhole fixed its bug and its program on how, like, signatures were validating cross-chain interactions. But if we can do a message pass, you know, what was, I guess, like, what's the sticking point where it's Wormhole versus CCIP, and then you have other sort of Oracle feeds, like, now coming up, or like Pith, where they, you know, they're trying to promise things like a completely transparent, you know, price feed Oracle. Like, you can guarantee that this price is going to be the price that it says that it is across, you know, X, Y, and Z, you know, applications. Where I would be concerned with the CCIP is that it's available only to where it's deployed, which is why I think it's a contract. Which is why, like, some of the L1s that were bullish about Chainlink, especially when it was first getting deployed and it was getting integrated, is that a lot of them were saying, well, you can't even have an L1 these days without either the graph or Chainlink. And so that.
So what's different here is that the CCIP system directly gains advantage from, in theory, the Oracle system that they also have. So, for example, you could have, like, a cross-chain transaction, and the Chainlink will know the price difference between the two assets at any given moment and can swap them, essentially. And I don't think that's something like Pith is working on necessarily. I think they're more purely about price feeds, not doing both. But anyway, that's my understanding. But again, I don't know the nuances between Pith and this. I don't have any, like, technical background to really, like, compare and contrast And the Pith people may be doing really good stuff, by the way. I don't really know for sure, like what's better and whatever. Definitely worth some research, though. And you know how these things go. It's like, it's almost certain that some of these companies do some things better than the others. The broader question is going to end up being like, what gets adopted the most? Because that's what everyone's going to use. Wherever the liquidity is, that's where everyone goes. So it's always a battle to figure out like who's going to be the winner for this whole thing.
I think, yeah, for sure, especially for the developer experience. But this is basically just sourcing data in a way that is manageable when you're developing. And I think for like these layer three applications that sort of sit on top of, you know, all of these different systems, I think Chainlink is promising, hey, like, here's a really simple way of integrating our Oracle feed into your contracts or into your dApp protocol. It could be cross-chain, it could be like dynamic NFTs, it could be these things. So that's the cool thing that I'm sort of wondering about, is because like everyone has like a different interpretation for writing an API, for example. If you're gonna, you know, what packages are you gonna write in, and how exactly are you gonna actually deploy something that's going to source data in the most efficient way possible. But you know, data is expensive, especially storage is expensive. So I'm kind of curious on how exactly they're like, where are they storing this data? How are we actually verifying that the data is actually stored securely? Because I know for a lot of the progress that we're making right now, as far as like cross-chain messaging, it's usually due to the fact that there's either an X handful amount of confidential servers that are pinging price feeds, and they have like an actual.
Yeah, in this case, there's what's called decentralized Oracle network. So they're not a single server or something like that for sure. How many computers are in that DON? And like, how robust is that shit? I'm not 100% sure, but my understanding is they can be as robust as you want to make them. Depends on the particular issuer of that particular asset. You might see like, you know, a larger, more robust network being built by someone who, like, you know, let's say you're issuing, you know, I don't know, you know, US dollar in the form of Swift assets, you know, then that's going to be a very robust system, and maybe a less robust one for frequent flyer miles or something. I don't really know. But like, the understanding is that's scalable as well. And it doesn't mean like, and every system won't be equally as like the strength of those networks is going to be based on the particular application, essentially. So it won't be like a one shoe fits all type of thing.
How far are we on now? Oh, sorry.
Was Nuba going to say something?
I was going to just say no, thanks. Yeah, just like the clarity. I'm still trying to figure out like which oracles and if I even need to build my own, because I'm just getting feedback from a ton of people saying like, you know, just build
what,
your own.
What data are you trying to import? Like, what are you trying to achieve?
I mean, the classic problem of just interoperating a message that's actually valid from one chain's contract to another chain's contract, and you know, that's really it. Like, if this thing is going to be able to be a general message passer, then you know, I just looked at their list of chains, and it's all EVM based. Where I think that's sort of the key difference here is this going to be for every blockchain, or is this primarily just going to be for Ethereum?
My understanding can be incorporated with anything. Like, this is not an EVM specific anything. And not only that, but the basic pitch for Chainlink is it's connect everything to everything, not just blockchains or EVM, but like your programming language or whatever that you connect this with doesn't matter, because it's a general messaging language essentially. So you can connect. Okay. You can connect like just a solitary computer to it if you'd like to. There's nothing preventing that. So yeah, it depends on the goal of the system or whatever. But one thing is for sure. Like, here's the thing. Like, right now we just have a bunch of fragmented liquidity. You have USDC on Polygon. You have USDC on Ethereum. You have USDC on like Axelar for Cosmos. You have like, mm-hmm. you know, and the entire user experience is stupid. And there's just a bunch of different like versions of coins sitting all over the place.
So about that, actually, what we've been looking into now is this concept of entangled rollups, which is trying to defragment the liquidity supply of, across all of these chains. There's a lot of really interesting research in this field. So I don't know if you've heard of the MIPS binary solution. So essentially it's a prover network that sits in a middle layer solution where you have layer ones and layer twos that usually have similar consensus models that can use similar operators, like how they sign keys or how they even create signatures or any of this. You can create a general message passer that essentially formats messages across these chains. So you can think of this as being like a chain 1.5 layer, middle layer. So this is being solved right now too. So I know that there's a lot of work done where, hey, let's just create a network that decentralizes purely just the relayer, the prover, and the sequencer so that we can read and post messages across any of the layer one and layer two chains where we have a similar binary. And then this would allow...
I think that's the same idea. Like, it's basically like a type of CCIP type of system. It sounds almost the same as far as in practice. And the other companies that have done this too, is like Layer Zero is one of them. That's that Binance Labs project. You might look into that. You have also Layer Zero from Binance. You've got like CCIP, you have Cosmos IBC, and I guess what you're describing is just another similar type of thing. But yeah, I think everyone's had the same idea. It's like how to implement it properly is what I think everyone's is the big thing right now. And not only that, Dylan, it's like, do you want to have one thing you want to implement for proof of reserves, another thing you want to implement for privacy, et cetera? So I think that what the Chainlink people are trying to do is build a like one-stop shop. You can connect all your shit at one time and also get all the liquidity from the different things that are connected to the system. And I think that's, if you ask me, like the biggest problem seems to be in blockchains right now is like cross-chain liquidity. So if that gets solved, whoever solves that definitely or solves it, but also gets adoption. That's who essentially wins.
Yeah, I 100% agree. Like the whole, like, how do you defragment liquidity where you can sort of move away from this burning and minting model? You can move more into sort of like an atomic swapping model, which I think even Vitalik was promoting. You know, he wanted more people to sort of do lock and unlock schedulers, where then you have a related message between these chains. You just need enough liquidity, of course, to kind of back up these assets, because no one wants to burn an asset that has a high potential value, of course. So if you're burning, you can't necessarily burn a Bitcoin. You can lock a Bitcoin. You can just permanently address it to something that can't move. So these minting and burning schedulers, I think those will become obsolete if CCIP does come out. But then,
yeah, I think the mint burn method's kind of what Circle USD's system was. Like if you incorporated Circle's, I don't know, whatever their protocol is called, it's CC something or another. It's another four-letter acronym. You incorporate that, I believe it was something like what you're describing. It's like a mint burn concept, but only for their one asset for USDC.
Right. But it's an easy way of essentially saying, like, I'm going to promise you liquidity later because I have some merchant account that has $1 billion in reserves. And like, I can always make sure that I, as the owner, will always address you, some person, some liquidity that is denoted in this token called a USDC. But like, is that like a native way of actually promoting sort of like the idea of decentralized finance? I think this is sort of the parallel of, do we keep going in this direction where we just keep having a bunch of off-chain vaults of a bunch of money that we are sourcing data from and basically trying to prove some random person's reserves to actually be a token promise that's on-chain where I can't actually control the supply? Like if that guy decides to basically rip the bank account and then I have $100,000 of this USDC token, then it becomes worthless. And so I think that's the biggest risk that's involved entrusting sort of these off-chain vault liquidity protocols. Like, I know that even for layer 100%. Zero.
No doubt about it. Like, at the end of the day, people want to make sure that their $100 million actually exists and this token is actually backed by something. And when you talk about inside of a chain, you have one set of issues. Outside of a chain, you have a different set of issues. But no matter what, you have to have some collateral-backed asset. And then how do you prove that that asset exists at any given moment? And that's where trusted entities come in. Like BTC being proof of work is basically trustless. Zephyr, trustless. But something like USDC, it's not trustless. Or for that matter, any other type of real-world asset. You have to have trusted entities. And those trusted entities have to be the primary issuer and responsible for giving you back your fucking money if you go to the remittance counter and want your money back, right? And that's the key. And I think, like, you can't build a lot of stuff. You certainly can't do a lot of composability type things unless that piece of the puzzle is absolute, right? Because you start building things on top of that, all sorts of automations and whatever else. And it basically becomes a cascade failure if one thing breaks. Which, for example, if the government decides to lock up Tether or something for some reason, and then now what do you do?
Oh God! If they started minting Tether for me, and that was the new standard, I would just lose my cool. But I think for this, I guess like where the differences are going to split, I guess it's sort of the same problem that people have in Bitcoin, where it's like, do we actually want to use the chain for actually storing data like in oracles? Then you have Bitcoin old schoolers who don't want to use the chain for anything except for payments. So you're going to have like this huge split of opinions where do we or do we not just use layer 3 aggregation layers. That I think even Polygon is trying to go into this direction too, where they're going to aggregate data across all of their nodes, and then this is the preferred method of actually making sort of like a data availability layer. And then Chainlink's taking it one step further. It's like, hey, let's just like combine all of the data from all of these different chains and allow them to sort of execute and read messages, which is really valuable. That's just a gigantic infrastructural cost. So there's going to be limited source inputs, I think, because they're going to have to service something that's of value to the DeFi ecosystem, since that's what they're servicing, which is just like token protocols, which in all honesty have like a huge capacity for being valuable in the world. But then in terms of where they're at right now, it's really, really, really tiny. So I think some of the first things CCIP will of course come out with is like chain execution, like signatures and like verifiable signature, also probably like price feed oracles and like the common things that they're doing now. And then somebody is going to try to bull run an idea on what kind of data that they want to actually source into that protocol. And then people are going to start delivering applications one by one. It's not going to be like infinite amount of applications then out of nowhere start spurring up, because well then all of those oracles, I would assume they have to agree on like what they're actually going to validate and store, because they're the ones putting up all the costs to make sure that everyone gets the cool dApp that they want. But if 100 users just want a cool app, but they have to end up storing a gigantic CV file for some GPT model dApp, they might not actually want to do this. It's just, I think the consensus of the type of data is going to be universal across the CCIP board, almost at the CCP.
My understanding, there'll be like thousands and thousands of these decentralized oracle networks. So the framework allows for just, you have to scale the networks to add all these different assets and different things, I guess. I'm not sure exactly how that works, but it's meant to be highly customizable too. So like, and you could maintain sovereignty, like a country or something could create a decentralized network, but then also still be able to attach to CCIP. And that way, it's sort of like TCP/IP in this respect, basically, right? Like you can, different countries and different companies and whatever use TCP/IP. It's just basically like a messaging protocol at that point. But requires you to, making it work requires you to have more computers. Like it doesn't, like you can't do it with like insufficient like routers and such, right? So I don't know.
Yeah, the data the data will change over time. Like, what's really valuable about like stateless data is that you could always guarantee that it's going to work within a limited time frame. So if I'm trying to bet on buying a token that is maybe tied to some sort of stock, and there's a confidential server that's pulling in and providing it to CCIP where I can then tokenize the actual mintable value of this thing, and then somebody wants to actually create like a SAFT agreement between buying X token to buying some X stock. So those are really interesting. So that is definitely something I see happening here. But then this is still stateless, so that data can always go away. It's proven only in time by way of what people like in a peer-to-peer network agree that the value is worth. And if we all agree to use CCIP as sort of like an off-chain Oracle standard, and I trust that this confidential server is relaying me some actual amount that I'm going to be ending up buying. What the only thing is that, like, how do we audit the actual price feed so that we're actually getting the correct amount? Because then whoever is controlling that input is also in control of the price feed. So
right. And at some level, Dylan, like, there is going to be a trusted source somewhere, right? Whether it's a thermostat or whether it's like, or a thermometer, I mean, like, or some, you know, weather feed, or whether it's financial or otherwise. It's one thing to say there's an Oracle that is validated that this came from the correct source, but it can't necessarily prove that that thermostat gave you the right temperature for the day, for example. Like,
that's funny, because like then that comes down to other proofs, like the location of that proof and where it came from, the time in which it came from.
Yeah. So eventually, yes. Like, the presumption is that you are, you know, the presumption is that you are dealing with sources that are at some level reliable, or at least you, like, the user finds enough reliability that that source is useful. Say, for example, the National Weather Service, or like, I don't know, you know, whatever the, like, the source of your data. I think one of the groups that's connected to CCIP is the, or has an Oracle feed of some kind, is Associated Press, which is the, you know, news organization in the United States that does a lot of they distribute news to a lot of newspapers and such. And I think, like, they have a thing where if, like, they issue a piece of news into the network, you're sure that it came from that company, and that it's like either, I don't know what the right word is, but it's like timestamped or verified that it's come from Associated Press and not some other fake source that's not the AP. They're the issuer of the asset, the data asset, into the ecosystem. It's not just financial data that Chainlink is working on. It's basically any data that requires some sort of verification of the issuer and such. And I don't know, like, how much real world shit you got to do to make sure all that is, like, you know, like, all of the feeds are actually accurate and stuff.
That's true. Obviously, I guess I guess the incentive model is being of a high throughput data provider then. So where data then becomes more valuable for the not just the end consumer, but then the person who's actually providing that. So anybody who's actually providing something that could be trusted and it's verifiable, and then they do some sort of like verified agreement with CCIP and say, hey, I want to offer this data. It's definitely coming from this source. Like, this is how we're actually securing it. We're either going to guarantee immutable storage of said history of that data so that people can forever verify it, or maybe it's for one-time use and there's not really a need for storing this. But, like, you know, I was just curious on whether or not this Oracle was doing any kind of storage. I don't know if it was stateful or stateless, if it was going to end up being an actual source similar to like Arweave, if they were going to be using like a system that was going to make it persistent or not.
My understanding is you can connect to this system any number of like data storage capabilities that you'd like to in between. I think it really depends on, I think it has a lot to do with the issuer and applications and how complex people want to make these things. I think it's in some ways that's similar to just the general internet. Probably the best. It's the best model. It's like the financial internet, where yes, you could connect specific databases or whatever if you needed to, or for that matter, just simply computers just for compute purposes. And not all of that has to be super decentralized necessarily. So you use decentralized where it's you use decentralization where it's necessary and centralization where it's necessary, and you use the best possible resources for those particular tasks, I guess. Because like this is the problem right now. It's like this idea that blockchain is good for everything. It certainly is not. So there's like that this Chainlink's idea of like bridging between the blockchain world and the non-blockchain world as far as general computing. So it's pretty ambitious. I don't know, like, again, not being a developer or whatever, I don't know like all the flaws and merits of the thing entirely, but it's definitely ambitious. I can recognize that part of it. Like it's more than it seems like a lot of other competitors in this space have done, and Sergey Navrov and company have been probably working on this problem longer than anybody, because he's been at this for quite a while. In 2019, I think, somewhere like 2018, 2019 is when the verifiable randomness module came out. Then after that, the price feeds thing came out. And the price feeds have been basically powering Oracle, the Chainlink price feeds have been basically powering DeFi and centralized exchanges since something like 2019 or 2020. And they've been working pretty flawlessly so far. So I'm not aware of any major crisis within those Oracle systems so far. It's considered kind of the gold standard still. And I don't know, like, is Pyth network better or somehow, you know, they've improved it somehow. But that's the other thing too with this, by the way, Dylan, is that Chainlink systems are not by nature a system that you can't upgrade. In fact, each decentralized Oracle network can be upgraded separately before, like, let's say you don't need an upgrade on a system that's working just fine. You can just leave it working as is, and you don't have to necessarily upgrade everything. And apparently, another thing is you can do upgrades on this system where you can maintain liveness in one decentralized network. You can create the, like, almost like a test net where you're running the new system, and then you can immediately cross over when the moment comes along. It's not like where all the validators in this set have to kind of upgrade their servers and shit. Like, whenever, you know how the blockchain world, like, you know, an upgrade comes through, all the validators have to fix their shit, and then, like, otherwise you get these, like, you know, like, forked systems for a period of time. Whereas with this, like, the entire Dawn network can be set up in such a way that the upgrade's done on the new network, and you just swap over to that when the time comes, so that you don't have any downtime for the users. Obviously, you don't, like, big financial systems, it's not going to make sense to have downtime and whatnot for very long. So anyway, a lot of interesting things I heard about how this works.
Yeah, as soon as you mentioned it, I looked up on Google, like, if there is any comparisons between Chainlink's thing and Pyth's thing, and there are, like, handfuls of comparisons. Of course, everyone's bias, of course, you know, towards their own.
Right, right. The little charts and things, yeah.
Yeah, like, look at my meme, and then it's, like, supposed to explain the entire thing. So, I don't know, like, I'm still trying to see, like, I guess what Pyth is basically claiming is that they have real-time access. You know why it's real-time? I mean, a part of the fact that it's also not used by everyone so far. Like, latency is also due to the fact that there's extreme throughput. So, maybe, yeah, it takes 10 minutes because everyone in the world is using Chainlink. I don't know how that would rack up against Pyth, because maybe less than 10%,
yeah, it's
the same amount of people are using it. So it's hard to kind
of... Good point. Like, how is this going to affect long run the speed and throughput? Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure.
But it's interesting, like, to see, like, their different opinions, because from what I can see is that, you know, like, Pyth is basically saying, hey, you know, you can make your own custom Oracle, and then you can basically derive data, and then everyone else can actually agree to that if they sign on to it.
It sounds like the brilliance of CCIP, though, is that you can massively parallelize for throughput. So, like, you can have network one over here, but you can have network two over here doing simultaneously almost the same thing, and it would just basically reconcile the where the assets are you know, like as the system's running. So I think it's possible to.
Oh my God. So that's hilarious, you know, because then it just sounds like Pith is actually just like the layer two to Chainlink. It's just using Chainlink's data, since all these exchanges and applications are using Chainlink. And then Pith is basically just making the real time of Chainlink's data. So it's a layer two oracle.
I'm not sure. I think Pith does do primary price feeds. I don't think it's simply layer two.
Okay.
I think they've been trying to form relationships with data providers separately from Chainlink. And I don't know exactly how that works, because I think they connect to some centralized exchanges, maybe to places like Binance APIs or something. We have to look and see what they've accomplished so far, but like, where are they getting their data from, right? Is the
aren't they dependent on Wormhole?
Oh, do they really? That's quite possible. And yeah, like, and Wormhole's accomplished a bunch, but the problem is, like, we know that these type of bridge systems are kind of like they have problems, obviously. Bridge hacks being
accident in the make. That's what they are.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like a train wreck waiting to happen. You know, I guess it's possible that like bridges get really, really good. You know, but the problem remains that you're only bridging to one chain. So if we end up living in a multi-chain world, which it appears to be the case, then you wind up like having problems. Even on Ethereum, like the layer twos are basically separate chains. If you from a practical perspective, from the DApp perspective and from the end user perspective, they're separate. So like you have to issue a USDC on Matic, you have to issue it on whatever. And even if Wormhole does it, they've got to create a Wormhole bridge to each of these places. And I don't know how that's set up right now. But
so like I've only been researching it in like the last 24 hours. So I'm also as rusty as you are about what they're doing. But from what I saw is that they have like 19 data providers that are all validating the data. So they have validators that are basically signing like, hey, this message was indeed signed by person A on this chain. And then 13 out of the 19 of us are going to sign it. And then we're going to pass it over to somewhere else. So you can basically like do a verifiable compute of signatures from these chains. And that's why it's also really expensive though. So I think where CCIP comes in is that if it could be an extremely trustless layer that is just to essentially optimistically push threads of data from off to on chain that's verifiable, and then everyone can verify that that is indeed the correct whatever data, then I'll definitely like use it. But again,
yeah.
Do I
their mantra, exactly how they do it, I'm not sure, but the mantra is like connect everything to everything, and verifiable truth through cryptography is kind of like the overarching goal. Like that's the theory. Exactly how it's all implemented is like I don't know. Like it's like someone smarter than me has to explain that all that shit to me. But yeah, it's like I think there's quite a few videos on this stuff too, by the way, that go into the nitty gritty of how you, you know, pass messages and everything else, how you incorporate NFTs, how you incorporate assets and things of that nature. Apparently, the program is quite robust in terms of the training, because they've been onboarding a lot of devs. I saw someone posted something today that Chainlink had more like dev activity than most projects in crypto at the moment, which is exciting kind of times for this sort of thing. So they've done a lot to create like an actual onboarding process, whereas most blockchain projects don't have that kind of tooling, documentation, and infrastructure, right? Since Chainlink actually sells a bunch of the LINK tokens to spend money on this shit, obviously they have a lot of money to be spent. They're spending my money on doing all that. So you get the picture. Like. They're definitely making some progress in adoption for that reason.
I'm sorry, because like me and my friends, we went to the Chainlink booth at ETH Denver, and then they had like a tent, and inside of the tent, they had like infinite snacks. And then, so my friends, they didn't.
They're spending my link tokens on fucking snacks.
Yeah, and then my DGenny friends just stole all of the life bars, and then like one of my friends like took one of the free hammocks that were available, and then they all started playing Extacion on full blast as like the chain link guys were just sort of like staring outside, looking into the tent, not knowing what to do. And I was like, this is so embarrassing. Like, this is so bad. But they have a good sense of humor. They have a really good sense of humor. Like, they're so a lot of the Chainlink like employee base, they are very they're very business oriented. Like, they try to they do direct relationships, like, and they do it in the style that everyone else does, where they go onto Telegram, or they'll go onto like Reddit, or they'll go onto all these different sources, and then they'll try to you're right, they have a really smooth onboarding process, because they set up whatever gigantic operation to take devs through step A, B, C, and D, but then they sourced everybody from all these different social medias, and then they put them into like email threads and then forum threads, and then they got them involved in some sort of developer program. I'm not sure if they're paying these people, but the fact that it was seamless is what I think is making a lot of developers just curious about the system.
They're paying a lot of folks. In fact, they announced that they're hiring like 100 or 200 more devs or various parts, people of their organization. I guess you have to go on LinkedIn or something to find out who's hiring what. But like that's what the Chainlink holders bitch about. They're like, oh, Sergey keeps dumping our coins to fund all these operations and things, which is fundamentally true. But I don't have a problem with it necessarily, so long as that money goes somewhere useful and, you know, like legit things are being built and such. So like, the internet FUD is funny. Sergey's dumping our coins. And, you know, like this is the standard mantra of the FUDders or whatever.
Yeah.
It's like as if nobody knows that that's happening already.
Yeah. We stole all of the life bars. Thanks for the life bars and the hammocks and the.
Yeah. So Chainlink's one of those coins that, like, price-wise, it may not go up necessarily as much as some things, because there is some selling involved and stuff, right? So it doesn't have it's one of those, it functions more like a security in the sense that, like, let's say you bought a stock and, you know, that stock got diluted, or the owner of the founder of the stock is selling some of the stock, like Jeff Bezos or something. Then yeah, you're diluting the end users to some extent, but the idea would be like, Amazon never made money for a very long time, right? Like, but why is their stock worth something now? It's because of the network effect of just the gigantic, you know, like they used to basically not make money for like 10 years or something, right? Amazon, or maybe longer. And I think Chainlink's attempting.
But they also
the same
avoided
thing.
Paying state tax for like 10.
Yeah, yeah.
10 years of no paying state tax.
Yeah, I'm not sure what they're doing, but yeah, you mean for the end user. Yes, that's true too. That led to big growth. But the point is, like, Link is in that boat where they're trying to gain the adoption of the industry, and therefore it's definitely one of those more longer hold type coins. It's not one of these like it's one of the few sort of legit things in this space, I would say. Like, you can count on a couple of hands the really, really legit type of projects that probably will actually go somewhere. Not legit as in like they're a scam or something. I'm saying like legit as in like in 10 years you actually expect them to have, you know, real world usage in some meaningful way. So this is like one of those kind of longer term holds, I think, if people want to get into Chainlink. As far as the token itself, I don't think it's one that is going to be like the highest performer pump coin or whatever. Like, you could probably make more money on Dogecoin probably than Chainlink, if I had to guess. Like, you know, like if you just sort of like dump a bunch of money and you want something to go 10x immediately. So this is one of those things that's like more complicated for the end user to understand. Like, these are not things that, like, you know, the average user is not using Chainlink for anything. So not using the coin to, you know, buy NFTs or something right now. Now that's going to change in the very near future, but that's not what's happening now. And therefore, like, you know, it's not going to have the same virality and stuff as like a, you know, dog with hat or something like that. Like, so this is a bit different type of thing if people are buying this coin. So I would just kind of, the way I would do it is like, again, everyone can do whatever they want to do, but like what I do is like hold this, have a little bit if you're going to have it at all, and hold it for a very long period of time as opposed to worrying about it. And then if it does really well over the long term, great. If it doesn't, no big deal, right? Like, that's the best way to look at something like this. Don't look at it as like bull market, bear market, when it comes to Chainlink. It'd be like more like holding early Bitcoin or something like that. In my mind, it's, if you believe it's going to have mass adoption, you believe it's going to be useful, then you should keep it for forever probably and have just a small amount, as opposed to purely speculating and stuff. But anyway,
I think what's interesting there of what you're talking about, at least like when you start talking about long term, like the one thing that came to mind while you were saying what you were just saying right now is that like I could see applications that are built on top of CCIP strictly so that they can access, because you can claim anything as off-chain data, but then if they do a token layer, like say if they made their own sort of roll-up system on top of CCIP and that you could launch tokens to, where the data that's underneath it is Ethereum and layer twos and such things, then you could technically, you know,
there is someone that did this actually, and they announced it just last couple weeks. It was WeMade, which is a South Korean video game company. I believe their video game, the big MMO game that they just created, it's called Nightcrows or something. And basically their token, the WeMix, I think, WEMIX, I believe it's in the top 200 in CoinGecko. Their token basically is like it's accessible via CCIP on Binance Smart Chain and a few other platforms. I'm not sure exactly which ones, but I think so they did exactly what you can actually, you don't have to deploy onto a blockchain specifically. You can sort of like deploy your assets into CCIP, and if that's all you need, then other dApps and applications can then access your tokens on the various chains that have implemented CCIP. So they're kind of like a coin issuer, so to speak. And I don't even know what the fuck the reason for their thing is. I think they have some NFTs, so I think they want to have cross-chain NFT capability. And here's the thing, a gaming company does not want to gamble on which chain is going to win in the long run, right? They want to go where the liquidity is right now, and they want a system that if they implement it now, the new chains that might come along might bring them more liquidity. That's what they want. Like, they don't care about like your specific chain. They really don't. Like, what if like Binance Smart Chain is what they implement on, and then later on chain X becomes very, very popular. And now they have to do the whole thing and implement that again. And nobody wants to do all that shit. And EVM compatibility versus not, and all this other nonsense is just like, nobody wants to be bothered with all that, right? Like if you have a computer, you connect it to the internet, you'd like to build a program on that computer in Rust or in, you know, C++ or whatever. You don't want to be constrained by, in terms of what applications you can connect to it and all that. So I think this is that, working on being that type of layer where you can just add a video game company to it and you're good to go. So, and here's the thing, like if there's a lot of liquidity flowing into something like CCIP, then you're a new game developer and you hop on and you plug into this thing. Well, you have a ton of money that can flow into your video game right away. It's the reason why Ethereum has been popular, because you know it's a place where most of the liquidity was, and that's where most of the developers go. So there's this tendency for money to be magnetic. Money attracts developers, developers attract money, and it, you know, it's a big, you know, vortex or whatever, like, and it gets stronger. And you can see that problem with like brand new blockchains today. Like attracting and keeping liquidity on various chains is one of the big challenges. And I think CCIP solves that for companies that want to incorporate their assets into a blockchain environment. Like it makes a lot of sense with CCIP for like an airline to incorporate their frequent flyer miles into that system, right? Like those points or what have you. It would make perfect sense to me. Because then you could connect it, like you can connect any computer to that. And let's say it's the, I don't know, like the hotel.com computer or some shit, like Expedia or whoever, they could basically use the same messaging protocol, and you can get all the different frequent flyer miles to go everywhere, in theory, including blockchain and otherwise. So I think that's what companies want. They want easy connectivity, but with access to lots and lots of customers.
And like, if, you know, for example, if CCIP does for it, like there are several entities that are now in that transit state of solving this interoperability problem. So in general, what happens when you're already a developer and then you're already on one chain, it's really hard to migrate and learn an entire new stack. But it shouldn't matter where you choose to build. It should just be that you build and then you deliver, and then you have options to sort of move and transfer yourself into other systems, which is sort of like the interoperability future. And you know, companies like Axelar and Layer Zero and Wormhole, Polyhedra, and these other companies, they come into the scene to try to give that developer the promise that they don't have to worry about it. But you know, when CCIP comes out, and then you have like things like Pith and whatever, you then have this like freedom where developers just get more bullish about the like the chain that they're actually working on, because then they know for a fact that they can always leverage other blockchain ecosystems once they actually gain adoption, and they can actually accrue liquidity on the system that they're on. It's just a question of whether or not like we're actually going to fragment it. And I think a majority of the solutions right now have just completely fragmented liquidity, and it's a huge problem. So like the final step to sort of entangle these systems is happening right now. It'll be solved likely in the next like probably year or two, to entangle messages in between these networks, and then CCIP can come in and actually aggregate data from these chains and then allow for like a really transparent message pass to like bring in these systems, like dynamic feeds of weather patterns. I mean, it was always sort of the dream, I think, for people to make NFTs where you had some sort of like weather change in the background of the NFT based on like actual weather patterns on where you were. So this like not only unlocks the social fi ability and like maybe even potentially royalty ability, like I know Story Protocol is going all in, so they would probably eat this stuff up. But then it also likely unlocks the ability to actually decentralize where you can then access artificial intelligent machines. So I think with sort of like the FUD that's going on right now with like the scare on AI and who's actually going to have like prime time access to these systems. Well, when you have like a decentralized Oracle network that is incentivizing data providers, then if anyone can become a data provider in this network of Oracles, then I mean, that's sort of, now we're getting a lot.
And you'll be able to block the fake data providers as well, the ones that are trying to pretend to be Associated Press or the weather or whoever, and you can block, you know, you can make sure that what you're seeing is the as close to reality as possible,
is the real thing. Yeah,
the real thing. Yeah. So that, yeah, I mean, I think that the bigger these networks get, the more expensive it is to have to be lied to, I guess. Is that the right way to say it?
It's extremely expensive to be running any of these systems. Like if you want to just be running a general prover, I mean the machine costs, if you're going to go bare metal, it's going to go like $3,000 at least. That's like just the bidding price. But for most of these validators that are just trying to spin up new node networks, like they're not going to source this to like being bare metal servers. They're trying to just go through AWS or IBM or Azure and all these other places. But the adoption curve really comes down to like this high amount of availability. So whether or not CCIP is going to be highly available is another question, because then how are they incentivizing these operators to actually be constantly running when those systems, again, I don't know if they're storing anything.
Yeah, the new system too is like there's a funding mechanism as well, so where the various parties are being paid, so the transactions fees aren't like blockchain fees where they're like, you know, almost free. They're a little bit more expensive, so because you're basically paying for, you know, actual computing
convenience
as opposed to blockchain networks now, which many of them run, many of the validators run where they're not actually making any money. They're hoping for the token price to go up of that particular blockchain. Like the top validators maybe make money, but a lot of blockchains, the lower validators are not, especially in Cosmos and stuff. So Chainlink creates a system where like the node operators are basically getting fees and whatnot. And then like they're creating the other thing they've done is they've created a structure where the Link token holders, there's going to be staking opportunities. Each node network that opens, there's going to be more opportunity for Link stakers to basically financially secure the network, and then get some of the fees that like are generated on that network, which is kind of so real yield essentially is something that's going to be increasingly available for people that hold the token. So they're trying to create like a purpose, more purposes for the actual token, whereas before they did not have that. So yeah, it's really important for these networks to be sustainable over the next 20, 30, 40 years, not like these validators that are working for free type of thing, or like IBC relayers on Cosmos who are essentially working for free to some extent. So these things become much more feasible and scalable when someone's making money.
Now it makes sense that they're hiring 200 developers, actually.
It makes me nervous that nobody's making any money. That's a problem. Like, you know.
If they're going to be making money, it's because there's going to be somebody that's actually already planning on deploying something that they've specifically said, like, hey, we need at least like 10 or 12 actual uses of this system, because if no one's going to end up using it when it comes out, then there's no chance that this thing is going to actually get adopted. But Chainlink has such a good amount of funding right now that they could be doing this kind of stuff like full time, around the clock, and at scale. So they're going to come.
Yeah, one of their backers is what's his name, Eric Schmidt from Google. So like there's definitely some serious people that think the project is worthy in some way.
It's likely because they're actually allowing for the feed to actually persist through Google then, because like they're just a gigantic graph network. And if Google wants to be able to source in data to the blockchain market, they probably have a humongous incentive to be doing this, because then they can say, oh, well, we'll make our own decentralized browser. Screw it.
And I think Eric Schmidt is not doing this in conjunction with Google. I think he was an early investor in Chainlink.
Oh, just from
entirely, like, yeah, him, his own funds or whatever. Yeah, it's a different thing. Yeah, it's not a Google tied thing, but I can imagine, you know, there may be room for collaboration essentially with these systems, of course. Yeah, although I don't know of anything specific like that going on. Like, there's no Google to Chainlink like relationship at this moment that I'm aware of, except for that one founder being, I believe, an investor or something. But yeah, it's interesting stuff. I was going to drop off for a bit. I might get back on a little bit later. I was just going to make some phone calls and things, do some stuff, because I'm stuck at an airport right now. I call the family and whatever. Like, it's like 11 o'clock.
When is your flight going to be?
Well, it got delayed till like after midnight.
Oh,
hey, Bruce. Bruce, you there?
May I join space?
Oh, yes. I was just going to drop off for a bit. I've got to make some phone calls to family before I... there's a flight I've got to catch in about an hour, so I'll get back on in a minute. You going to stay awake? Or what time is it there? Must be morning, huh?
Don't talk to him.
Oh, sorry, I'm back now. I just switched the window.
It's like 11 o'clock at night here. I was going to basically get some phone calls done and then get back on a little bit while I wait for my flight.
How long is your flight, and what is the flight code number so I can track your plane and be waiting for you?
It's like I'm going to be home by like three. No, not even home, but like I've got to get to another airport by 3 a.m.
Jesus.
That flight got ruined because I was supposed to get there by evening and then make that second flight. So then I got to stay awake at, or like go to sleep at the airport or some shit. And I've got to wake up in the morning. It's like there's a flight out at 8 a.m. again.
And this is the life of a crypto millionaire, is it? This is what we're supposed to all aim for, huh?
Yeah.
Just about it. This was the this trip was like
this a little is bit like dumb. Where you get to if you make it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think there was a tornado here and it killed a bunch of people or something. So then I don't know if the flight got delayed for that, but then the flight fucking landed finally. And then after it came in late, then they're like, oh, it's got maintenance problems. You gotta wait till midnight. I was like, what the hell? This is like a flight that was supposed to be like 6 o'clock or 5 o'clock in the evening. It's like a midnight flight now. Crazy. Anyway.
Well, I pray it's not a Boeing.
I don't know what it is. I didn't look. Like the simplest thing that could happen now is I die in a plane crash. Like I'm getting sick of waiting for this plane.
At least they made the effort. You got delayed, maybe inconvenienced, but better safe than sorry.
Yeah.
And hopefully it's not Boeing people working on a Boeing aircraft.
So anyway, I'll drop off and come back in a bit. I think I'll try. All right, catch you guys later.
Wait. When will you come back? I need to arrange to come back at the same time.
20 minutes, I guess.
Like how many? Yeah, maybe 15, 20 minutes.
Oh, not long.
Yeah, give me a little bit.
Okay. How about uh-huh. I take myself for a walk like a dog, and then I come back in like 20 minutes.
That works.
I'm gonna go walk myself.
Everybody, go walk right now. Get some exercise and whatever. Yeah.
I'm a good dog.
Okay, cool. We're gonna walk yourself. Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the burbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of trash is under the dirt. We rape and plunder the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play. Ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Motherfuckers walking around here looking faceless, trying to make a living selling friendship bracelets. Dead ends dragging out the max amount of payment. Red down days, got them acting all bankless. Yo fam, what? Check these tokenomics. They probing this bear, flexing broken honest. I had to lay my soul down, I'm just roasting otters. And then to end a long day, 11 bowls of chronic. Never known the politic, I was born to frolic. It's been my policy to pollinate all over the plot. We got a lot of apologists jumping in at the top. We like to measure their velocity before they hit rock bottom. Over impossible loss, it's all moss. And I'm liking the odds, fondue in the morning, forming mycological bonds. Flick the cap, yo, the world is highly involved. Flip a coin, diary fall. Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the burbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of treasures under the dirt. We rape and plunder the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play. Ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Trying to figure out the max amount of DNA stacked in non-toxic just to get a better place, smacking on the hostage like this shit is play for keeps. Clowns, white knight, and all these Maybellines, they call it implausible when model after model keeps on ripping off the coat and going full throttle. Beats tearing apart your community, all these low hanging fruits bearing zero liquidity. Got a planet in reach, coming standard to each. I'm on the back 10 stargazing after the siege, commanding all the management to grab a few Z's, and then we'll round up the beasts and send a messenger east. Y'all better sign a release when I'm bumping these beats. Hands up if I got motherfuckers drumming the streets. Yo, we got a few dubs, we got a couple defeats, and if you're coming for the king, you better have some of each. Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the burbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of treasures under the dirt. We rape and plunder the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play. Ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Spaces.